I was ungainly, awkward, a fat kid. I didn't feel comfortable, Flom remembers. I was one of two kids in my class at the end of hiring season who didn't have a job. Then one day, one of my professors said that there are these guys starting a firm. I had a visit with them, and the entire time I met with them, they were telling me what the risks were of going with a firm that didn't have a client. The more they talked, the more I liked them. So I said, what the hell? I'll take a chance. They had to scrape together the $3,600 a year, which was the starting salary. In the beginning, it was just Marshall Scadden and Leslie Arps, both of whom had just been turned down for partner at a major Wall Street law firm, and John Slate, who'd worked for Pan Am Airlines. Flom was their associate. They had a tiny suite of offices on the top floor of the Lehman Brothers building on Wall Street. What kind of law did we do? Flom says, laughing. Whatever came in the door. In 1954, Flom took over as Scadden's managing partner, and the firm began to grow by leaps and bounds. Soon it had 100 lawyers, then 200. When it hit 300, one of Flom's partners, Morris Kramer, came to him and said he felt guilty about bringing in young law school graduates. Scadden was so big, Kramer said, that it was hard to imagine the firm growing beyond that and being able to promote any of those new hires. Flom told him, ah, we'll go to 1,000. Flom never lacked for ambition. Today, Scadden has nearly 2,000 attorneys in 23 offices around the world and earns well over $1 billion a year, making it one of the largest and most powerful law firms in the world. In his office, Flom has pictures of himself with George Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton. He lives in a sprawling apartment in a luxurious building on Manhattan's Upper East Side. For a period of almost 30 years, if you were a Fortune 500 company about to be taken over or trying to take someone else over, or merely a big shot in some kind of fix, Joseph Flom has been your attorney and Scadden has been your law firm, and if they weren't, you probably wish they were. I hope by now that you are skeptical of this kind of story. Brilliant immigrant kid, overcomes poverty and the depression, can't get a job at the stuffy downtown law firm, makes it on his own through sheer hustle and ability. It's a rags-to-riches story. And everything we've learned so far from hockey players and software billionaires and the termites suggests that success doesn't happen that way. Successful people don't do it alone. Where they come from matters. They're products of particular places and environments. Just as we did then with Bill Joy and Chris Langan, let's start over with Joseph Flom. This time putting to use everything we've learned from the first half of this book. No more talk of Joe Flom's intelligence or personality or ambition, although he obviously has these three things in abundance. No glowing quotations from his clients testifying to his genius. No more colorful tales from the meteoric rise of Scadden, Arps, Slate, Marr, and Flom. Instead, I'm going to tell a series of stories from the New York immigrant world that Joe Flom grew up in. A fellow law student, a father and a son named Maurice and Mort Janklow, and an extraordinary couple by the name of Louis and Regina Borgenecht, in the hopes of answering a critical question. What were Joe Flom's opportunities? Since we know that outliers always have help along the way, can we sort through the ecology of Joe Flom and identify the conditions that helped create him? We tell rags-to-riches stories because we find something captivating in the idea of a lone hero, battling overwhelming odds. But the true story of Joe Flom's life turns out to be much more intriguing than the mythological version, because all the things that seem in his life to have been disadvantages, that he was a poor child of garment workers, that he was Jewish at a time when Jews were heavily discriminated against, that he grew up in the Depression, turn out unexpectedly to have been advantages.